My abilities. DreamWorks. Let me start that again. Psh, I completely lost it. One last time. Third time's the charm.
It's the Interdisciplinary Life Podcast, Episode 7. Today we talk to Karen Powell and Vivienne Cruz about their work with Signing Animation, an animation studio looking to bring American Sign Language and deaf animators into the animation industry. Today's show includes brief periods of silence due to the lag time involved in ASL interpretation. Thank you so much for your patience. Hello, and welcome to the Interdisciplinary Life Podcast. I'm your host, Roberto Santiago. And with me today are Karen Powell and Vivienne Cruz from Signing Animation. And I want to give a quick sort of intro to how this episode is running a little bit different than previous episodes. Vivienne is a fantastic deaf artist who I'm very excited to have on the show. With that, we have two interpreters who are doing ASL to English interpretation. And so when Vivienne is answering questions, for those of you who are not watching the video, if you're listening to this in your car or on your headphones, over the course of the interview, you will hear two different voices representing Vivienne's answers. So thank you very much to our interpreters. And now I will bring in Karen Powell and Vivienne Cruz from Signing Animation to talk about this animation studio, the new project they're working on, and how the two of them are really helping to pioneer a new movement in the animation industry. So with that, let's start with Vivienne. Vivienne, can you just introduce yourself and give us a little rundown on your background?
Sure, yeah. So I'll go ahead and introduce myself. My name's Vivienne. I was born deaf and raised deaf in a hearing family. My parents and sister learned ASL in order to teach me. And I eventually ended up at a small school with deaf students for a short period of time, and then moved on to a mainstream school in the hearing world, for the advantage of getting to take lots of art classes. And so I attended art schools all growing up, and went to New York to study computer animation at SVA, the School of Visual Arts. College there. So did college for 4 years at SVA. And then I decided that I wanted to focus specifically on storyboard animation. And here I am.
That's awesome. So I guess as a preface to getting into Karen's side of things, you went to school, you graduated. Pretty much in America, we are told that you go to college and you graduate and you go get a job in your field. What has that been like for you since you've graduated? Like, how is it finding work? And sort of maybe what is that like for someone in your profession? And then what has that been like for you specifically?
So after I graduated, I came back here to Florida. I live here in Miami, and I'm living with my family at the moment. And it's much more of a chill lifestyle. I really needed a break from all that work I was doing in college. I did try to apply to a few studios, but it was a very frustrating experience. I didn't get in to any of them. They didn't even respond back to my emails. And how would I even know what was wrong with my reel or my project if they didn't tell me, if they can't respond to me? That was really difficult for me. It was not an easy process looking for work. I faced a lot of struggles in that department for sure. Fortunately, Karen found me on LinkedIn and offered me the job.
That's very cool. And that's a great way to bring Karen in. So Karen Powell, you are the founder of Signing Animation. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and sort of what Signing Animation is all about?
Sure, let's see if I can encapsulate it. This is a second career for me, actually. I was a classical musician for about 15 years before I did this. And I switched from music to animation because the job market was insane.
Can I ask you to pause there? We just heard how hard it is to get into animation. So you're saying that it was even harder to be a musician?
Oh God, yeah. I remember showing up to one particular audition where 300 other people came. I think that was an audition where I had to lose 10 pounds because it was for the Coast Guard band and they had a height weight requirement. And I showed up, 300 other people did as well. We all knew each other and no one got the job on the first round. That's how bad it is out there. So after that, everything else seems easy. and plus, animation is just more fulfilling. Like, I'm a very visual person. I have a single-sided deafness and I went to a mainstream school and I rely on my eyes more in general, despite having the use of the one ear. So I got into animation when I turned 30. It was the fantastic quarter-life crisis. And once I'd accrued some industry experience, I started pitching a short starring a deaf ballerina. Because I had yet to see signing or deaf culture shown in a well-rounded way in animation. Like, there was a lot of focus in on the parts which are interesting to hearing people. And on top of that, it just hasn't been very well executed. And I wasn't exactly sure where the disconnect was there. So when the time came for my own short, I knew that making the story would require the involvement of the people whose lived experience it is, because while I have single-sided deafness, I'm not part of a language minority. So my co-founder and I found out, we were looking around in the job market and we found out a lot more about the bias against deaf, hard of hearing artists in the animation industry. It's a serious thing. we realized that one project could accomplish a lot of different things. So by making the film with deaf, hard of hearing artists on every level, we could make something gorgeous, prove to streaming sites that people are interested in deaf representation, demonstrate how integrated teams work, have a great time. And that's how Signing Animation got started. We're 70% deaf, hard of hearing. We have some hearing volunteers, but it's them who adapts to us, not the other way around. And that's really, really refreshing.
Vivian, let me ask you about representation of deafness or ASL sort of in mainstream animation.
Growing up in a hearing world, I really didn't see a lot of deaf culture or deaf people often in mainstream media. I was very into art and movies growing up. I loved games and so on. But everything I saw had only hearing people. And I really wanted to focus on my art at that time. But
yeah. Well, there sure does need to be a change, right? Just in terms of representation in TV and film. You see kind of these extra characters, right? Sort of these extraneous characters who are deaf, and you don't actually see anything about their inner lives or anything. They're just kind of there almost as set dressing in so many examples in TV and film. And I just feel like it almost becomes a waste. Like, are they just there to make the movie seem cool? It's not real representation of what deaf people are about, right? Like, there's never any addition to the story. It's like, oh, here's a character who can sign, and now we're moving on. And so that's something that I would really love to see change. I feel it's kind of offensive to deaf people. I mean, if you're out at the store, right? You're shopping for groceries and you encounter an individual who goes, "Oh, I know a little bit of sign language. Did you see that one TV show with that one deaf character?" And I'm not necessarily interested in watching a TV show just because it has some tokenized deaf character on it, right? That's not really a real representation of me or deaf culture or what a deaf person could be about, right? And there are some examples of that in media, but like generally it's really minimal. And I feel like it's really time to stop these tokenizing depictions, you know, because I think it ultimately comes down to doing it for material gain as opposed to doing it for real advocacy and real representation.
That, you know, with the deaf experience, it has been a real challenge for me, especially when I was young. I didn't know how to socialize with my hearing classmates. And at first, I did have to have an interpreter, and I hadn't before, so that was a new experience. I kind of had to learn really how to communicate. And through the interpreter, I could talk to my hearing counterparts, or we would talk back, we would write notes back and forth, and we would become friends over time, and I would teach them finger spelling, and then later they might learn some sign language, and that maybe even then after that they pick it up and become fluent and we could talk in my native language. Yeah, for me, I noticed that most deaf people have some struggles with how to feel a part of the hearing world. And deaf people like to stay together and be in a comfortable place with each other, but I think it's more about getting along with the hearing people, and we shouldn't silo ourselves, and I think we should all spend more time with each other. I'm really trying to pull these two worlds to one.
So Karen, you started this animation studio because it's easier than being a musician.
One of a couple reasons, but that was in there.
That was in there. I guess what I'm leading to in that, when I hear about you starting an animation studio, like, I have no idea what that means, right? Like, what is the structure of that? Like, how do you make money? How do you come up with projects? Like, what is sort of, like, really briefly, like, the nuts and bolts of saying, like, oh, now I have an animation studio.
So a year ago, I wouldn't have known the answer either. I had worked with enough small studios in the past that I'd seen how it worked from the inside. And that helped me to get a bit of it helped me not start from zero. But as far as the practical reality of it, it's not unlike putting together a theatrical production. So it's possible to do like one man show or to do an animated short by yourself, but it takes a really long time, and you can achieve a greater level of complexity and well-roundedness if you have a lot of hands and teams and, you know, different chemistries coming together to work on it. So a studio is composed of different teams handling the different aspects of production arranged in along what's called a pipeline. So the pipeline is which teams affect which others in what order. So for instance, the animators can't do their work until the modeler has finished modeling the character and the rigger has taught that character how to move. So modeling, rigging, animation, and that's like a little piece of the pipeline. So at the top, we have the production team, which furthers the best interests of the studio, helps us make contacts, helps us keep organized. And then we have the creative teams, which do like what Vivian and I do, which is the story, the look, the way that it moves, the overall style. And we're all working toward the same goal of making the short. Now, as far as money goes, we're a nonprofit, which is a little unusual in the animation world, because the idea is that investors give you money with the hope that they can recoup that investment on the distribution rights. But our goal isn't to make money. It's to make this particular story while getting industry jobs for our artists. So we're funding our first short through the Kickstarter that we're doing right now. And the plan for sustainability involves partnerships, consulting with studios to assist accessibility efforts, and giving talks. So what we make is it's going to be released on the broader internet for pretty much everyone to see. Like, we don't want it to be behind a strict paywall or inaccessible. Like, this is for, by the people, for the people type of stuff.
Vivian, so Karen talked about the pipeline, and I looked at your website and I looked at your reels and some of the stuff that you've done, and I thought it was super cool. But can you tell us, you're a storyboarder now? What does that mean?
Yes, of course, sure. When a person has created their script, they'll hand it to me, I'll look at it, and there might be some directions in the script on what will happen in the scene. And I come up with it in my mind. I draw it out on paper. I set up different things that will be in the scene. I make sure the emotion is carried through. How these characters will be moving will say a lot about how they're feeling. That's basically what storyboarding does. It expresses emotions, facial expressions, body movements. I love playing with all of this. It is so much fun to me. And then once I have all of this laid out, I will send that over to my teammate or my team, and they'll look at what I've done, and hopefully they like it and get it, and then it'll move further along in the process of animation.
When you're storyboarding and you're sort of going through the different camera angles, right? The different shot layouts, is that something that you're coming up with, or is that working with the director? Who sort of takes that, the agency for that part of the creative process?
Oh yeah, right. I'm not doing this alone, of course. I'm working with my team, Karen, others as well. And we all look at this together to see if things are working. And we do make decisions on if we have to delete something or move an angle. We come at it together and we talk as a team and agree on things if they look okay, and then it'll move forward once we have all agreed.
Our process is generally pretty democratic. And collaborative.
Karen, you talked about this idea of a short with a deaf ballerina. Is that the one that you're working on now?
Yeah, I can go into a bit more detail about that if you like.
Yeah, so I watched the Kickstarter video, and you have a deaf woman who's a dancer as part of this creative team. And so I was wondering, sort of the genesis of it, like, did you have this deaf ballerina idea and you went out and found a deaf dancer, or did you already know her and that's where the, like, how did that come about?
Oh, it was so amazing how it came about. I absolutely love this part. So I chose a deaf dancer because dancing is a universal expression of inner feeling. And universal means everyone, including deaf, hard of hearing people. So I came up with the character, and then I was looking for artists to help me bring her to life in a respectful, like, accurate way. I had this deaf dancer character, and when I was looking around for artists to help me bring her to life, I found Zaina Simon and Antoine Hunter, who run the Urban Jazz Dance Company in Berkeley. And they were so helpful and receptive and awesome right away. I was so psyched to find somebody whose life experience it was to be a deaf ballerina, particularly because there's so many different styles of dance. I really wanted to find someone who understood the nuances of that particular career and the training that goes into it, and combine that with a deaf lived experience. So that was Zaina all over. And then here's another funny bit. Right from the beginning, the main character's name was Vivian. And I found Vivienne, our storyboard artist, 4 months after she was born. I remember seeing, I found her, as she said, I found her on LinkedIn. I was sorting for storyboard artists who used ASL, because that's a factor you can have on the search function there. And I remember seeing her name and getting like really excited. And then I saw her portfolio and then I got even more excited. I think I played it relatively chill when I met her, but I was absolutely desperate to bring her on board when I saw her work. The fact that she said yes was a huge gift to the studio and remains that way to this day.
That's very cool. Vivienne, of course, that's got to be fun to see that. So I also looked at your website and saw some of your work, and naturally a lot of work that's out there is not ASL centered and is not deaf centered. And your portfolio sort of reflects that, right? It's a lot of stuff that you were brought in to work on just out in the world. It was like Geico and women in STEM and that kind of stuff, which is awesome. Is it different for you to be working in this company on this project as compared to something else you may have worked on?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this is really the first time for me to... I'll say that I've never really worked on something like this before. And in all honesty, I really haven't worked on anything that's used ASL in the story. Generally, I've done a lot of work with characters who keep quiet and who haven't done a whole lot. Until now, being able to incorporate ASL into the art, it's kind of a funny feeling just because it's so novel. It's not something I have any experience with. I so appreciate being able to put this directly into the story and having it be an integral part of the creative process.
And I know that, like, as an interpreter, so I talk about this experience sometimes where I worked in hearing-centered environments, right? Like the federal government and, you know, private businesses. And I did a lot of tech stuff. Right. And I thought I was really good as an interpreter for tech, right? So like people would call me for that and I'd be like, yeah, I can do that. And then a few years later, I went and worked in a deaf IT environment where everyone was deaf except for like two people, right? And so the interpreting changes. It's the same topic. It's the same sort of environment, but I didn't realize until then how much the deaf people in the hearing-centered environment were changing how they use language so that I would say the right thing, right? I thought I was good. They were good. Then I got into the deaf environment where the deaf IT people didn't care what I said at all. And it was like a whole new learning curve, right? Because now they were signing for each other and not to make sure I said the right thing. Right. And so it was this completely flipped perspective for me. And so I guess where I'm going with that is, how different is it maybe for you to now be in a work environment that is more centered on ASL rather than maybe previous experiences working in animation that's more centered on a typical hearing work environment? And now I assume there's interpreters present, but they're there for the non-signers.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that it's really important. Right, representation is so important, right? And like we've got a really broad variety of people. We've got hard of hearing people, we have people who sign, and we have people who don't sign. And I feel like it's important to understand that everyone is within sort of that larger umbrella. You know, whether you come to us with a lot of experience signing or not, you're still part of our broader community. And not only that, but also I feel like the representation of people's skills and expertise is so important. The new ideas folks can bring to the table that no one else has ever considered before, you know, things that can be really groundbreaking. So I think that that's, it just carries so much value for me. And I would say that in my life, I've kind of occupied this middle ground between the hearing and deaf worlds. In some ways, I'm kind of stuck in the middle. You know, I didn't necessarily do a lot of immersion into the deaf community. And I would say that now I am more integrated into the deaf community and more integrated with my deaf peers. But at the same time, I still have these strong connections with the hearing world that I kind of grew up in. And so in a way, I'm kind of straddling between the two worlds. And it can be hard to fully know who I am because I feel like there's different ways in which I'm a better fit for each. I don't know.
Yes. I could just say that. I think that's a very familiar place for a lot of people, both people who are deaf and other people who move between cultures and between languages. I know that, you know, working here in the Bay Area and working with students at various levels from college down through kindergarten, those students also talk about that, whether they're new arrivals from Spanish-speaking countries or whether they're deaf and hard of hearing students, but all having that similar, like, moving between two cultures and two worlds and trying to find a place, I think is a very familiar theme for people. And so Karen, I'll throw this over to you. And as a person who has single-sided deafness, but who isn't a fluent signer, you took a step to create that environment for yourself. So as you're in meetings with your staff and with your crew, what is that like for you?
This borders on a really interesting discussion about identity and community and all that. But as far as how I feel in this group, one of the things that's interesting about the way that I relate with the hearing world is that, you know, you get good after a while trying to blend in. People want to blend in to various groups. And I learned how to do things like how to stand at the side of the room where my hearing ear would be pointed towards the most noise. For instance, my entire house is arranged around my ear, like my seat on the couch is the one that's facing towards where the other seats are. Like it's the furthest right because my hearing ear is on the left. My husband always walks on my left side and always sleeps on my right, like things like that. you learn about how to blend in is the point. And here in this studio, no matter what I might say about something that I need for my hearing, whether it be captions or for someone to repeat something or for people to talk one at a time so that it doesn't get lost, it's not weird. It's not out of place. It's not something that anybody's going to throw shade at me for or, you know, or prevent me from advancement in my job or prevent me from getting a job. Like it's just normal here. So the relief that I feel being around it, being in this environment where it's fine it's incredible. It's like taking iron shoes off, honestly. And I feel like it's stimulated my creativity in ways that I could not have possibly predicted when I began.
Which then of course leads to the uncomfortable question. And I would love to hear Vivian's perspective on this as well. But I think that especially in this political environment that we're in, we're now, as a country and as a society, we're waking up more to not just understanding the variety of cultures and the variety of languages and the need for acceptance, but we're also starting to re-examine and in some ways be skeptical of people who are coming into minority spaces who don't necessarily clock as having that background, right? So you are a person with a single-sided deafness, but you're also a non-signer who's setting this up, this nonprofit, with the goal of getting ASL into animation and getting deaf animators into jobs. I think that there could be some skepticism from people sort of going like, is this a savior mentality thing? Where is this coming from? Why are you here? And you've touched on that in your last answer, but can you go a little more into maybe addressing some skepticism that people might have?
Sure, sure. So I'm very lucky in the production team that I have. One of the things that they tell me over and over, as regards to many different things, the story, the way that we staff the crew, all of it, is this. There are many different ways to be deaf. It's heartbreaking when people write in to say that they don't know whether or not they're welcome here because they might have had implants put in when they were a baby and they never learned how to use sign language, or that they're hard of hearing and they mainly use English. Because, I mean, you're welcome in this studio. You live a visually dominant life. You know what it's like to feel like an outsider in a hearing world. You're afraid that openness about your hearing or your lack of it will cost you work or advancement opportunities. And that right there means that you belong. So our thesis statement as a studio is that people who live visually are, first of all, the best authorities on how the community should be shown in animation. And second of all, have a natural leg up as animation artists, because we're watching people and reading body language all the time. Like, we deserve a far greater representation in the animation industry than we currently have. So a visually dominant life encompasses all the different ways to be deaf and hard of hearing. That's why it's not just going to be about this particular story that we're starting with, actually. We're going to be bringing in a series of directors with different viewpoints on the deaf, hard of hearing experience to make more shorts along the same theme as this one, to make, I believe the term we've been throwing around is deaf fantasia, an anthology of viewpoints from a bunch of different directors. So this is just the first. We're really excited about putting the whole concept of many different ways to be deaf into art.
Vivian, do you have anything to add to that?
Yes, I do have a couple things to add to that. That everything Karen said, plus there's also, well, for us deaf and hard of hearing people, there's this other perspective, there's a deaf perspective and a hearing perspective. And we're coming at it from two different sides here. And it might feel very different looking at the same thing. We have more of a focus on this visual world that Karen's talking about. You know, we're not so much thinking about music and sounds. Our world is different. What hearing people are listening to, we might not be. We're more using our eyes here and we're catching things faster. We notice things way faster than hearing people do. And also, once we see something, we're not forgetting it. We can see something and it really sticks with us for a long time because we got to see it.
To elaborate on that just a little bit, because a sound gets lost for me when I'm in a crowd. If there's more than one person talking, it just goes. I have been a really good lip reader since, you know, ever, forever. And the one thing when I was learning Maya, the animation program, the one thing that I never had to struggle with as a student was lip syncs and animation. Like, I already knew how to do that. And it was as easy as breathing. That's what it's like for people who rely on their eyes for all of it. Like, do you have to, you know, do you have to break down the physics of a walk cycle and, you know, take it into its component parts and build it back up again? No, like people understand the weight shifts. They understand where a person looks with their eyes when they're lying. Like it's psychological, it's body language wise, and it all comes together to make a spectacular group of animation artists. Like the industry is sleeping on us, and and they don't have to. There's this huge pool of incredibly talented people who are waiting right outside the door, you know?
Makes me think of ASL storytelling and that very rich, I want to say oral tradition so that people sort of understand what that means, but obviously it's a visual manual tradition, but that storytelling, that live storytelling tradition that gets passed down through generations of deaf people, through either their families or through their peers or through their elder role models, but that ability to tell a story and something that even is going to be understandable outside of people who know ASL, but to be able to tell a story visually with all of the very rich things that using a visual manual modality presents without using English, without necessarily using signs, and what that can bring to animation in terms of storytelling, because animation is also a visual medium. And so you can show things, I think, if you really have that, like you said, that visual acuity, you can probably do some things with storytelling, with character design that are subtle, but super important, right? Or super meaningful.
So it's one of those situations where there's a lot of different reasons to affect a positive change. Like, for instance, there's the fact that we've got a lot of college students who are graduating with training in 3D animation. And they, you know, a degree in the 3D arts is actually one of the better chances that students have to make a living off of that college, you know, education and recoup the cost of their own degree. There's students graduating from the deaf institutions every day with, not every day, but every spring, with training in 3D animation. And they end up getting a question at the interview that other people don't, which is, how are we going to communicate with you? And that that affects a lot of different hearing and hard of hearing and deaf styles as well, not just the signers. Like, for instance, if you're asking people to repeat themselves a lot, then you come across as flaky or like you're not paying attention. If you let people know in advance that you're hard of hearing, even if you use English, then they'll start to be nervous about your ability to blend in well at the office, and they can shut you out of the process at the most deniable point, which is the recruitment pipeline. So there's this strong need to correct a hiring disparity, to put it in those terms. And that's the, you know, the simple justice side of things. And then there's the artistic side of things, which is what you were talking about, where, you know, yes, we are natural born animation artists. Like we belong in this industry so much. and so between the two, like if we can talk with studios about this recruitment point of failure, if we can normalize accessibility efforts inside the studios to make things like networking and dailies accessible for all crew, and if we can prepare animation students of tomorrow coming out of Gallaudet and NTID for the job market, then everybody wins. Everyone wins. And it's so hard to come across a win-win-win-win type of situation these days.
So I was going to say for Vivienne, since you have this experience firsthand, would you like to educate our audience a little bit? Outside of interpreting, there are dozens of ways that deaf and hearing colleagues could communicate over the course of a day and over the course of a project. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? if you're sitting in an office with people, or if you're even if you're working remotely, being deaf or hearing almost doesn't come into play as much as people, I think, are assume, because we're using texting and Slack and email and VRS. And like, can you talk about some of the tools that are available for people that actually make it really easy to hire a deaf person? It's just hearing people don't think about that. And what's been your experience?
And I did have a teacher that I can remember from college, and at that time, I did not have an interpreter in that class with me for that teacher. And I was meeting my teacher to have a one-on-one, and I thought it would go okay. And when I went to meet the teacher at their place of work, we sat down, and there obviously wasn't an interpreter there. So we did notes back and forth, and we did funny pictures, and we used our body language, like I mentioned before. And all they wanted to help me. This teacher wanted to help me improve my reel or improve my work. And that's all I want. I want people to try. I want people to try their best, even if they're not deaf. Just try to interact with people, bring out a piece of paper, and just make your point clear. And that's all. It would mean so much to me.
With the modern workplace being more dependent on asynchronous or electronic communication, I think it breaks down a lot of the barriers that hearing people think there are, because they immediately say, how are we going to communicate? And they don't think about all the ways they communicate with other hearing people that aren't based on speaking and hearing. You know, I get way more Slack or Discord messages than I do phone calls. Right?
Yeah, totally.
We've talked a little bit about the current project. Do you guys want to tell us a little bit about what it is? What stage is it at? Tell us about the Kickstarter. Give us your social media handles so we can follow you and learn all about all the cool stuff that you're doing. Take it away.
So would you like us to start with the story itself, or do you want us to give like more of an outline and talk about the Kickstarter? Like,
I'm actually going to back us up a little bit. Can you tell us about some of the networking meetings you've set up?
Oh yeah, those were fun. This past January, we had a networking event for deaf, hard of hearing storyboard artists that was co-hosted by Signing Animation and DreamWorks, which has a disability advocacy group within it called My Abilities. And we were absolutely floored both by the attendance and by the results. It was amazing. So I thought we'd maybe get 15 people showing up. We got over 50. The dream workers were really interested in meeting our artists, and you know, naturally our artists want to work in this really amazing company. So bringing the two groups together and watching the chemistry further in the rooms, like having people asking really interesting questions and our artists being able to show off what they worked so hard on, like that was incredible. And then the next day, Janie told me that there were directors at DreamWorks asking the question, like, why can't this main character be deaf? Why not? Like, asking that question is where better representation begins. It's not the be all and end all of better representation by all means, but these conversations are so important to getting that cultural shift started. And Vivienne, you got to go. Did you want to tell them a bit about what it was like from your end?
It was so exciting. And I just so enjoyed being able to hear from other deaf and hard of hearing artists, and getting to see their work, getting to see their cool ideas. It was fun too, to just be a fly on the wall with DreamWorks, to see all of these different employees and what they wanted to ask about, you know, to hear from them about their work environment and what a day in the life is like for them. So I really, really appreciated getting to learn from both sides.
So what's going on with the current project? Where are you right now in that cycle?
Oh, so we just finished visual development. Like, we are close to finalizing the storyboard completely. It's right down to the detail work. So we know exactly how this story is going to play out. We know our characters really, really well. Vivienne has been with Vivian, the character, since the very beginning. We have two different sign names for the two of them, so it's easier when we're in a signing situation to define the two. But I think the whole visual development team feels really attached to these characters in this setting. So we've been with it for about a year now, and because of the collaborative approach that we take, they were formed by the group, not just by one writer, not just by one artist. It was definitely, you know, everybody's baby. So she's ready to be animated. She's in 3D now. We got to see a demonstration of the animated rig just last week from our artist Austin. And his last name is spelled Balaich, Balaich. So to say that again, we got to see the rig last week from our rigger Austin Balaich. And he showed her walking and dancing. It was just the coolest looking thing, wasn't it, Vivienne? Like,
oh yeah, so cool. He's amazing. He's way beyond my capabilities.
he just amazes me with everything he does. He's a modeler, animator, rigger, illustrator. So he's like a quadruple threat. We're really happy to have him on the crew.
And so, Vivienne, are those some of the sketches in the Kickstarter? Are those your storyboards?
They are. Yeah, yeah.
That's very cool. But as Karen says, like, okay, we're almost done with storyboarding. Does that mean that your part is done and you move on to the next project and you just sort of wait and see what they do with it? Or are you still involved going through to the end?
You know, I don't know. once the storyboarding is completely done, I don't actually know what's next for me. There are certainly different ways I can still be involved. I can help out just in terms of cleaning up some of the character design, and I can definitely weigh in. When we're looking at scene design, you know, and just animating the scene, you know, like sometimes certain aspects are missing and those kinds of things. So those are places that I can kind of jump in and help. Okay. Yeah, so I can definitely pitch in just in terms of cleaning up the ASL dialogue, because ASL dialogue is seriously a challenge for animators, just in terms of hand placement and motion. It's not easy, so they might need some assistance on that. So I might actually do some videos of myself just going through some of the dialogue, just to support the animators to understand exactly what we're talking about in those storyboards. Just to make sure that we can match up all the facial expressions with the signing. And so that's some of what I'm looking forward to doing in the future.
So I think I can speak a little bit as to what Vivienne's role is going to be now that storyboarding is done. So that's the cool thing about Vivienne as well as Austin. She is also very good in many different areas of the animation pipeline. She has a background in 3D animation, and I've seen her work on that front. And she's a fantastic illustrator. She's clearly a very accomplished storyboard artist. So The funny thing about our cruise so far, and I did not expect this at all, is that we have a 100% retention rate. Everyone who's walked through the door has stayed. In fact, at one point, I thought that we had to reduce that to 99 because we didn't hear from one of our interns for a little bit, but it turned out that she had COVID and she came right back when she felt better. She's okay. She pulled through just fine. But I remember when we didn't hear from her for a while, I'm like, ah, she's a college student. She might have moved on to greener pastures. Turns out, no, she's still here. but we've found that people in their animation education often take on multiple roles. So what we've ended up doing is where people want growth in any particular team, they can go there. Like our whole policy is an open door meeting policy. So our meetings are all linked on a common calendar. Anyone from any other team can sit in on, say, the layout team or lighting or set dressing. And if they want to have that resume item, like I did this role on this production, then they can just ask. And we, you know, guaranteed we're gonna need them. So where she goes next in this particular production is up to her, but she's welcome on this crew as long as she wants to be here, pretty much, like until she gets a full-time prestigious job like the one she deserves at a studio and doesn't have any time for us anymore.
and that I was gonna sort of jump in, because the ultimate goal, right, of signing animation is, it's great to have the retention rate, but it seems like what you're aiming for is to have all your people poached by big studios.
Oh yes, we can't talk about it in detail yet, but it's already begun. We've developed some good relationships with larger studios, and our artists have had the chance to pitch stories there. And one of them has recently been picked up for development. So I so want to tell you more, but I want to wait until I get permission from this artist. But we've got people who are getting part-time positions elsewhere and wanting to stay here anyway, which is just incredible and really gratifying. Like right now, we can only really afford to have part-time workers here. So when people do get that day job, they tend to stick around still.
Okay, so give us the Kickstarter, give us your websites, give us your social handles, let the audience know how they can keep up with both of you.
Okay, I'll start with the Kickstarter. You can find us on the Kickstarter platform by looking up Liftoff Animation. Liftoff is the name of the short, and Signing Animation is the name of the animation company. We're seeking $40,000 to fund animation, and we are 95% of the way there as of this morning in under 2 weeks. We have another 2 weeks to go, and this means that we're heading into stretch goal territory, and our stretch goals are to get the film done faster, get more people to be able to watch it, and hire more full-time artists. That's been incredibly important to us. So once we reach that point, we're going to be keeping people updated on our progress consistently, all sorts of, you know, behind the scenes stuff. Whenever we make mistakes, we'll probably be posting it to our social media because we think it's funny. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/signinganimation. Our Instagram is signing_animation. You can find us on Twitter at @signanimation. So they're all subtly different, but that's what happens when everybody's taken all of the handles already. Just to reiterate, the Kickstarter is Liftoff Animation. The title of it is Deaf Point of View Animated Short. We are really excited about growing our audience. We're really, really grateful, Roberto, that you had us on this platform of yours, that you're sharing us with your audience. And Vivienne, do you want to tell them about your website and your social media too?
My website is viviancruz.com. And that's it for me.
That's fine. Not everyone has to be on social media. I'm a big proponent of people who are not. I did want to give everyone a chance to advertise themselves because, you know, we're trying to get you signed up at Pixar or whatever, right? Like that's part of the goal. And I know like for me, right, like I have like 18 different social media accounts because I'm always trying to plug something or fight with someone or whatever. but thank you both so much for your time. Thank you, interpreters, for your time. And, you know, our family has contributed. So we're looking forward to getting our tote bag or whatever, you know, t-shirt. I guess you don't do cells anymore, right? You can't get like an animation cell. But
it's a bummer, yeah. But like thank you so much for being a backer. Seriously, like we want to emphasize that everybody who joins in on this campaign, whether it's $1 or $100, like that's one more person saying like, I'm interested in seeing this kind of media. I want to see this kind of thing on streaming. I want to see studios making this kind of thing. That's a message. Every backer is a message. So thank you so, so much for being part of that. I mean, the rewards are awesome. Like we have some really, really incredible rewards. Like the bath bomb in particular, all of our backer rewards are from deaf-owned businesses. And everyone has been falling all over all of it, the keychain, the bath bomb, the t-shirt, like we were just really excited to have a custom bath product made for our film that looks exactly like the sky in our film. Like, what?
I think that's the one that we were like, oh, we got to get the bath bomb.
Oh, the creators have been incredible. Like I've been a fan of the comic, That Deaf Guy for years. And that artist made us a sticker just for us, just for our production. Like I had to try so hard not to fangirl all over that situation. Like it's just been amazing to be part of this ecosystem and to have a sort of, you know, rising tide, raising all ships kind of situation. I'm sure that's not the saying, but.
Well, again, thank you all for your time, and thank you to our listening audience, and this video will be posted. So to our viewing audience, thank you all so much, and we will catch you on the next episode.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Interdisciplinary Life podcast was written and directed by Roberto Santiago. Interpretation services provided by Bay Area Independent Interpreters. Our theme song is David Koresh by Abundant Society, all produced in association with NTDL Productions.
Oh. Recording.
We are.